Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, family, brothers and sisters, men and women, boys and girls of all ages. This is Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, and I'm your host, Brother Rudolph Muhammad. And I am joined by my lovely co-host, Sister Lachelle Muhammad. And, of course, you know we are coming to you live from the Queendom. And we are going to bring you the news dealing with being prepared for disasters this week. Sister Lachelle, would you like to greet the people? Sister Lachelle?
Okay. She's on the line. I don't know if she can't hear us or something.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll just keep going until she comes. Okay. Well, family, let's start as we always do. I have to take this time, first of all, to give you the greetings of peace in the paradise of As-Salaamu Alaikum.
It's incumbent on me, because of who I am and what I believe, my duty to my God is to pay homage and to be humble and to give obeisance to the Almighty, All-Wise Creator, one, for allowing me to be alive another day in his glorious creation called universe. Two, I have to thank and praise him for coming to me to get me out of the wretched condition I was in the person of Master Faraz Mahan, and then raising up one that was in the same deplorable condition that I'm in.
That's right.
To show to me that it's not just him that can be raised, I can be raised also if I apply myself, if I discipline myself, if I humble myself, and if I follow the program.
That's right.
And so, again, I thank him for those two things. And then I thank the God again for not leaving me comfortless in this day and time and leaving a most perfect example of righteousness, a most perfect example of obedience, a most perfect example of discipline to the program in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so in those three great names, I want to greet the family in the greeting words of peace and the paradise of As-Salaamu Alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Now, to those who may not be, one, Muslim, two, who may not have a good knowledge of Islam to understand what it is I'm saying, or who may not be of any specific faith tradition, they're just spiritual. As-Salaamu Alaikum simply means peace be unto you, and we open that way and close that way because that is truly what we wish for our family, our brothers and sisters. We're taught that you cannot even be considered a Muslim unless you want for your brother and sister what you want for yourself. So I wish peace for you because I wish peace for me. And as we try to bring this information to you each week, as horrible as it may sound, as vulgar as it may get, as raw as it may come across, we are wishing you peace because we're trying to enlighten you to the fact of what dangers lie await for you. And so by giving you this information, we are praying that you will utilize it in the best manner and you will prepare yourself so that when the danger comes, maybe you can avert. Sister Lachelle, are you on the line?
Yes, sir, I'm on the line.
Would you like to greet the family?
Yes, sir, absolutely. I would love to greet my family in the greeting words of peace and paradise of As-Salaamu Alaikum. I would love to greet my family in the words of power, that God is with us. And I would love to greet my family by sharing information with them for the benefit of their mind, body, and their spirit. I'm Sister Lachelle out of Detroit, and I very much look forward to every opportunity, every Tuesday that we have with you to share the information that we researched for your benefit because we love you. You know, we love you enough that we work very hard to put something together for you that will be of your benefit. So I pray that you enjoy the show today.
Queen, this is your house, you know, and I would be remiss if I didn't give the queen an opportunity, of course, to say something in her house.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I would like to say that in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, of course, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah who came to us in the person of Master Farah Muhammad. And I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is indeed his messenger, as well as I bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, leader, teacher, wanna, and guide, and I miss it. And I'd like to greet all of you, the panel, Brother Rudolph, Sister Lachelle, and the listening audience on the phones and in the chat rooms in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, Brother Rudolph.
You are very welcome. I'm issuing a challenge right now, starting this off like this. This is how we get down in New York. I want to see who's going to be the baddest and the boldest with raising their hand in the chat room and communicating with us this week, not just sitting there stealing a hearing, but adding
right.
to the discussion in order that we may elevate the consciousness of our family and do the work of resurrection that we are supposed to do in helping to deliver the mentally deaf, dumb, and blind to the God. I want to know who's going to be, where are our helpers this week? So let's go 718-516-212-973-770-804. 803, hold on, I'm not finished yet, 202-301-518, and 516. I'll stop there.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that, because I would hate for you to go too long, and I didn't get to invite the 313, the 517, the 734, the 269, the 989, the 947, the 810, or the 517 out of the Detroit area. Don't forget about the 616. Don't forget about the 248. I'd be remiss if I let you forget about our 989. And did I say the 231? I want to make sure that everyone in the Detroit area feels comfortable and invited to call in to the show and ask your questions or show your support.
Now, because we did not say the 929, the 678, the 510, the 812, the 310, the whole West Coast area code. So because we didn't say that doesn't mean you're not invited. You are definitely invited.
And I think that Chicago, who is greatly on the phone, would also feel neglected, as well as Houston, Louisiana, Florida, Arizona. Who else is this? I think that's Utah, Canada. I don't know that area code. Okay. It's some more people on here, too, but they're not raising their hands here, Brother Rudolph, so
right.
I guess you better start talking.
So those of you who we did not acknowledge, look, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. We don't even know that you're there. So make
That's
your
right.
presence known. Be like the God and make your presence known. Raise your hand. Press the number one. If you don't do nothing more than simply just give the grief. Do that. Let us know that you're there. Okay. So now, this week, what are we talking about? This week, we are talking about, are you physically fit enough to survive?
Exactly.
That's what we're talking about this week. Are you physically fit enough to survive? See, disaster preparedness, having that go bad, having that shut-in kit, that's one thing. We talk about all the stuff you need to put in your go bag and stuff, but can you carry the go bag once you put it in? Can you carry the go bag to where you need to get to seek refuge when you have to leave your place of residence? Can you even get there is the question. So that's what we're dealing with this week. How physically fit are you for survival? So for the next 2 hours, these are the things that we are going to be entertaining and dealing with after we get through some current events. And the reason I said that is because all the United States. There are things happening in all of these states and the cities that when you hear them, they make you gasp almost. But know for a surety that in this day and time that we're living in, everything that's going on is prophesied to happen, and it's supposed to be going. So, you know, we just have to gird up our loins and, you know, be prayed up and just be found working as these things are unfolding all across the globe. Here in New York, yesterday, aside from the police officer that was just buried, that died, he succumbed to the injuries of smoke inhalation, there was a fire in a high-rise tenement, and he and his partner rushed in to try and evacuate people. They were overcome with smoke and had to be evacuated and rushed out themselves. Well, one of them died, and the other one is still in the hospital on critical. And already the talk is coming by people, well, why did they go in there? Why did they rush in? You know, we as people, especially in this issue, can appear to be so cruel, so unforgiving, so heartless when we are speaking from the knowledge base of our job and from the professional standards of our job. We almost lose the humanity and the humanitarian part of what we do and why we do what we do. And so I wanted to just put that out there, that when you hear us talking about certain instances, again, we're not trying to be overly critical. We're not Monday morning quarterbacking of anything, but we are using everything that goes on as a lesson to be learned from for our response to what is going on. And again, we constantly say, and I constantly say when I teach my workshop, that during a time of disaster, the wrong decision can be detrimental to not just you, but to everyone that's close to you. Now, of course, God is the author of life, and he is the author of death. There's no question about it. There's no question that these gentlemen, that their heart was in the right place. They, as all first responders do, every day, 365 days of the year, 24 hours a day, put their lives on the line, or put our lives on the line, to save someone else's life. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. But again, God is in control of all things. So to the family of both officers, I personally, and we send our condolences to the brother that passed, and send our sympathies to his family, his children and his wife, his siblings, and to the one that's on critical, we send our prayers of support and our energy that prayerfully Allah will spare his life and allow him to return to the job. But if he doesn't, then our condolences will go that way off. Then the other thing that went on yesterday was a wild shootout in broad daylight. A man shot 9 rounds of ammunition in the crowded street, shooting at someone. The gentleman that he was shooting at, he did manage to hit him in the leg, but a 13-year-old boy that was walking with his aunt got shot in the back of the head that came out of his left eye, and got shot behind the ear. Now, all praise due to Allah, he's still alive. And then there was a second youngster that got shot in that wild barrage of ammunition or gunfire also. So again, and I know New York is not the only place these things are happening. They're happening all over. So if you have a story of something that happened in your area, raise your hand. Press the number one. Let's hear about it. Let's talk about it. And let's see what we can come up with to try and help prevent these things from happening, or at least to deal with them when they happen.
That's right. And I was thinking when you were speaking, my brother, my very own, my biological brother, pulled into a gas station on Saturday night, and he was going to get some gas after leaving his mentorship program that he works with the inner city youth in the city of Detroit, where we were born and raised. And he sees, as he's just sitting there with his car turned off, you know, getting his wallet and stuff, he had to get out the car, he looks up, and directly in front of him, two pumps over, is a gunman pointing a gun at someone. Can't exactly see who. So he says, I get out of my car, and I said, so it never even crossed your mind to pull off? And he said, absolutely not. He said, because I'm looking at somebody whose life is in danger. They're looking down the barrel of a gun. And it never crossed my mind to leave them there. He said, I step out the car so I can assess the situation a little better. I step into the shadow. I look, and I realize the gunman is pointing the gun at five elderly people who are standing outside of a very nice vehicle, and there's a second gentleman shaking them down while he holds the gun on them. He said, I pull out my phone. I call the police, who tell me they've already received a call that there's a gunman at the gas station, but no police have gotten there. So he says he decides the situation was like it's escalating. He decides to engage by himself because he's afraid that the gentleman is going to keep his word and kill these people, as he keeps telling them he's going to kill them. He walks up on them. He engages. He starts, you know, he alerts them that he's coming, that he's the police. As he runs towards them, they fire shots back at him. I could have lost my brother, and I didn't even know he was at a gas station, you know, in the inner city of Detroit. I didn't even know that he was pulling his gun. I didn't even know people were shooting at my brother. And those five elderly people who had a flat tire, who pulled over to a gas station like any of us would do if we had a flat. We would think pulling to a gas station that's well lit and we'd be safe. They pulled into the gas station to fix the tire, and in that moment, some people who were just waiting for an opportunity. And the gas station owner later told the police, I had called the police an hour ago and told them there's somebody outside my gas station with a gun. He said, they just been standing over there. I saw them from the cameras, but no one came. So we're getting into a time where it's not the police, it's not that they won't come, they can't come because they're at another shooting. They had another murder. They had another problem. We have to become the type of citizens and brothers and sisters in a human family that we're willing to reach out for each other. We're willing to do something. Now, everybody might not have a gun and be able to run and engage like that, but, I mean, you got your car. I mean, your car is itself is a weapon. You've got your phone. You can call and get involved. The thing I'm so sick of hearing people say is, that ain't my business. I'm not going to get involved. I mean, I saw it. I knew it didn't look right, but I didn't say anything. Time is out for that. We absolutely have to at least be willing to dial 911 and get involved at least that much. We have to be willing to say something when we see something that's not right. And we have to be willing that when our boys say, let's go rob these old people, to be like, nah, man, that ain't even what's up. We've got to be willing to speak up and say when something is wrong. When the exchange of gunfire, my brother was able to wound one of the other gunmen. And so the process is going through the courts now, but it's just really sad that two young ruffians so comfortable just besieging themselves on five elderly people at a well-lit gas station, and the gas station owner didn't even think to when they pulled up and saw him getting out to call over the intercom and say, pull off, it's a gunman right here. And he knew they were there. We have to become more willing to get involved. We have to be more willing to assist. We have to be more willing to save lives.
That's right. Wow. So, all right, in the chat room, questions in the chat room, comments, statements, questions on the phone line, and nobody's pressing the number one yet? What's up,
kid? Not yet. Well, my ticker is turning over because we're getting a new influx of calls, but I don't see anyone yet. I didn't see it before it started turning. It turns over every 100 calls. So not yet, Brother Rudolph, but we have a couple of questions in the chat room already.
Okay, let's deal with it.
Okay, Dresa, and I pray I'm pronouncing her name correctly. She says, how can you get your non-believing family to participate in disaster preparedness in terms of fasting, eating foods that are essential for survival? My grandmother is set in her ways, but I want to be able to help her. She is still eating fried foods, pork, etc. If she is not in good physical condition, she could perish.
You are 100% correct, sister. And here's the, oh, man. See, I hate, no, let me not say that. This is Brother Rudolph being the Brother Rudolph that everyone tells me I should not be.
Oh, no. I know what you're getting ready to say.
Oh, my.
But I'm going to say this with due respect. Sister, and with all due respect to all that are listening, to anyone who is not willing to change their bad habits, to lose their lives, then there's nothing that you can do for them other than give them the correct information, give them the truth. The Holy Quran tells us that we hurl truth at falsehood until we knock out its brains. We have to be the kind of believers and the kind of righteous people that we love our people more than they hate themselves. And so in doing that, our way of thinking also, because again, I was getting ready to be what's comfortable for me and say what's comfortable for me. But I can't do that because I am a messenger of him. And him being H-E-M, not H-I-M. And because I believe in the teachings of him, as taught by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, by of love for my people, and understanding that the ignorance that is so pervasive in our family is not there by coincidence, it's there by design. In our lesson, it says that we were taught to eat the wrong food.
That's right.
So, praise due to Allah, some of us have come into the knowledge of the time and the knowledge of the truth and understanding to understand why they are considered the wrong foods, why we were taught to eat them. But again, now, think how long did it take us to come into that knowledge? And if there had not been one who was persistent in trying to get us, would we be where we are today? So you have to keep trying, sister. You can't give up until you close your eyes. You have to keep trying to save their lives because you don't know what Allah has placed maybe of benefit to you and to us as a family, and you'll never find it out if you don't go after them. So there's a scripture that speaks of casting pearls before swine. I'm not calling your family swine no more than I'm calling mine swine. What I threw that out there for was to say that there are some times and some people that just are not going to hear clear message. Only Allah can make a Muslim. Again, all we are charged with is delivering a clear message. So make the message as clear as you possibly can. speak the language of the people, as Paul said, when in Rome, do it to Romans. Speak the language of the people that you're talking to so they can understand unequivocally exactly what you're saying, and then move on from there and be an example of what you're saying. Do not be a hypocrite to what you're trying to bring. Just Michelle?
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. Definitely agree 1,000% with what you said. Sound advice. What else? Only thing I would add to that would be that there is a book called What Would Jesus Eat? It's a book. You can get it Barnes & Noble, Amazon. What Would Jesus Eat? And in that book, it talks about not eating pork. And every other food, literally, that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us that we should not eat, the book explains that Jesus didn't eat it either. So I would say get that book and just lay it on the coffee table. You know, sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words. Let them research it from their point of view. Because sometimes when we come to our family, even if we try to speak Bible, they still wait for the hidden agenda of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan coming from a believer. But they're like, Farrakhan must have taught y'all that. Okay. So sometimes we have to literally give it to them from someone that is completely separate from us, get the point across, and then marry the two things together. For example, when my mother was dying of cancer, she was in a special study for people with pancreatic cancer. And in the study, they were linking the eating of catfish. This was a study at the U of M hospital in Michigan. The eating of catfish with the rise in pancreatic cancer in the area and in black people in general. And she came home from the special study and was like, Shell, you're not going to believe what they were sharing with us about the hazards of eating catfish. And I said, you know, Mom, with all due respect, I've been asking you to stop eating catfish for years. And she said, oh, you're right. You did. I can't say you didn't, but you didn't tell me it was linked to cancer. I said, I just knew it wasn't good for it because that's what the messenger taught us, that we don't eat it. So she immediately stopped eating catfish, but she was a big catfish eater. I don't know if that's what caused her pancreatic cancer. We never found out. She died before she finished the study. But sometimes when they get that information from someone else and from a source that they can accept, it's easier for them to listen to the other things you've been telling them. Because she didn't have to come back and tell me that they told her that. But she rushed back to bear witness to what I had been saying. She was like, yeah, that is true. You've been saying it. But I didn't know it was connected to this. Sometimes you got to show them something else. So I would suggest start showing them research from other than the Nation of Islam, so that they can digest the research, and it has all the research bears witness, then give them our book, then give them the Nation of Islam perspective, and it may be easier for them to swallow the pill. So that's what I would say, Brother Rudolph.
Man, that sounded right.
Do
you have anything to add to that?
No, only thing I would say is, always remember Surah 103, how the minister started out his 58-week series, enjoying one another to patience and enjoying one another to truth. That's all you can do.
That's
my best advice on that one.
All right.
Okay, we have a question from Marcus. He says, what is the safest way to heat your home or persons in the home when power is lost?
Well, there's a couple of answers for that, but understand this principle. If you have it doesn't matter whether you have a big home or a small home. Once power is lost and you don't have the ability to heat the home the way you do, you need to cord off the house or make your area as small as possible, and then you can properly heat that area more efficiently. So you're going to have to close off certain rooms, maybe the room that everyone is going to gather in and stay in, that's going to be the room that you're going to work on keeping at a towel under the door to stop the draft from coming in. Do not seal off your windows with plastic and duct tape. Do not do it. Refrain from doing it. Because if you do that to every window to stop the draft, you also stop the air from getting in, and you will suffocate and die. There was no other way for me to say that. You have to have some kind of fresh air coming in order to survive, because you have to breathe oxygen. If there's no oxygen coming into a room and you're just in there breathing, constantly breathing and rebreathing the exhaled carbon dioxide that's coming from you, you are constantly inhaling and exhaling carbon dioxide, your body will become so acidic from not having fresh oxygen that you will bring yourself into a respiratory crisis. So it's 6 of 1, 6 of 1/2 of the other. Put on as much clothing as you need to keep warm. Keep one source of air, fresh air, coming in. And then just try and reduce the draft from other areas in that room. And then the other thing is, there are always things you can do. There are certain candles that you can light and use a jar that will help to radiate the heat to take the chill out of the air. That's also good if you're stuck in your car. You can do that. But again, you can't keep the windows closed because the burning of anything causes a noxious fume to be released into the air. And without fresh air, you're allowing the poisonous airs or the permeate in the air, and that itself will kill you. So you always have to have a source of fresh air. So again, use layers to keep warm. And again, depending on the type of home you're in and the type of environment that you're in, you can take a red clay brick and place it on your stove and turn the eye of your stove on and heat up that brick, and that brick will disperse heat to the house. If you're let me say this right now. You should never use your oven or stove to heat your house. Brother Rudolph, it's cold in here. I need to just put darn heat in this house. Okay, put a pot of water on the stove and a pan of water in the oven, so that you're not just allowing the gas to fill up in the house and then try and fall asleep on it. At least by using the pot of water or the pan of water in the oven, you're creating moisture into the air as well as warming the house, so you're cutting the poisonous fumes. I'll stop there. Mr. Michelle?
Michelle?
I don't know where she went to.
Okay, so I'll stop there with that.
And Brother Rudolph,
can I ask you,
I think I remember you telling us one time about what are the portable covers that they can use? There's something like foil or tin paper or something
the
like that.
They call Mylar, M-Y-L-A-R, Mylar, like when you watch the marathon, New York City Marathon, Boston Marathon, you see at the end everybody's walking around where it looks like a sheet of aluminum foil wrapped around them. Well, those are Mylar blankets, and those blankets are designed to keep heat in. So if you have those, you can always utilize those to maintain your body temperature.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you. And we have a question from Sean. Sean says, seasonal changes keep my children and I congested. All of these cough medicines and sinus medicines cannot be good. Any natural alternative?
Yes. Natural alternative. Well, again, here's where I give my disclaimer. I am not a medical doctor. I am not your healthcare provider. And we are not diagnosing or giving anyone firm remedies to medical conditions that they're having from this show. We advise everyone that's listening to have the medical situation to take it to your primary care provider. You are not that comfortable with your primary care provider, then I guess you have the wrong primary care provider. Because your primary care provider or your PCP should be the type of person that you can go to and talk to about anything and not feel the least bit inhibited about it, because if you don't give them the actual facts of what's going on with you, how do you expect to get a proper remedy for what's going on? And so often what happens is we lie to our health care provider, then we try and sue them and blame them when the remedies they give us or the treatments they give us don't work for us or cause us to spiral out of control and end up worse off than we started. But it all starts from the lie that you told to them. All the healthcare providers do is take the information that you give them, insert it into their intellectual database. They adjust some of the variables with their clinical assessment and case studies and research history, and then they spit out a diagnosis or a treatment plan for you. Start off not being 100% truthful and honest about your condition or what's going on with you. It's impossible to get the right diagnosis or treatment on the other end. So where you're natural remedies are concerned for your seasonal congestion, there are many things that can be done depending on exactly what's going on. If you're talking about a buildup of mucus and phlegm, well, that's diet-related as well as or medication-related or treatment-related. Maybe you're eating foods that contribute to the production of mucus and phlegm. That happens to present itself at a certain time of the year. Maybe you actually have seasonal allergies that cause the release of histamine in your body as the seasons change. And so you need an antihistamine to stop that release or block it. Maybe you have allergies to certain things that are in your home environment, and you need to rid those things out of environment, no matter how sentimental they are to you or no matter how much you like it. You know, there are people who have pets who are allergic to pets, but they won't get rid of the pets. So all of these are maybe type things, and I have to keep saying it that way because I don't know the actual fact of what the family is actually going through. So that's why I have to say it this way. This is the most professionally competent way I can say. It, you know, again, the eucalyptus oil for respiratory, you know, the peppermint tea, there's just so many things that are coming to my mind right now. Again, though, without actually knowing the specifics of what they're talking about, I wouldn't just dare to just throw things out there like that. So have them listening, if you're listening, contact us at carehumandetroit911@liv.com. O-I-T 911@LIDE.com. And we can work with you to see what the best remedy is going to be for you. Okay. Wait.
Yes, sir. All praises due to Allah. And Demetrius, he wants to know, how can you stop smoking? And I guess he's talking about cigarettes without medication.
This reminds me of a story that I heard when I first came into the mall.
Come on.
I was told, well, we were told that someone wrote the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and asked him that question, how can a person, it was a very lengthy letter, but that was the gist of the letter, asking how they could stop smoking, and we were told that they got an answer back from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And it was a very short and succinct answer, and it said, just do it. Or just
not,
something of that nature. Well, let me say it this way. How did you start smoking? It's the same way you have stopped. Now, we know that there's a chemical addiction. Yes. We know that there's a chemical side to we understand. How do you substitute one chemical that's bad for you with another one that's bad?
Mm-hmm.
As a medical provider, as a healthcare provider, I say this. You want to get off one drug, so they wean you off of one drug by getting you dependent on another drug. What sense does that make? Are there natural alternatives that can do the same thing that the drugs do? There certainly are. I am not one that is equipped to tell you at this point what they are, because that is not my field of expertise, but there are those that are out there who that is their field of expertise, and I implore you to seek them out and find them. And find those people who have already achieved what you are trying to achieve and find out how they did it. And how they did it may work for you, it may not work for you, but you need to try it and see, because worst case scenario, you'll be no worse off than you are already. But there's something that you're going to have to try and experiment with yourself. Act like a scientist. Study yourself and find out why you smoke. Find out when you're most prone to smoke. Is it after a meal? Is it after sex? Is it when you're stressed? Is it when you're just idle and doing nothing? Is it when you're at the club drinking? When is it that you smoke the most? Again, you have to make yourself a study and document your findings so that you can have actual facts to go from in order to plan, cure yourself of this problem that you have. Again, contact us at Care Unit Detroit 911 at LIDE.com, and we will assist you every way we can to get the necessary help, treatment, information that you need to accomplish your goal.
Yes,
Michelle, come back on the line.
Okay. She's on the line, but I think her phone might be muted for some reason. But she's still on here. And I just wanted to tell Demetrius, I can tell you that I used to smoke. Even though, yes, I'm a lifetime member of the Nation of Islam, that was one of my vices. And, you know, I really think it's more psychological than anything, even though there is a chemical addiction. You just have to make up your mind that you love yourself and that you love God more. You have to find things to do with your time. And Brother Rudolph, whether most people know it or not, not only just the inhalation of tobacco is the habit, but popping the pack is a habit. Flicking the lighter is a habit. Flicking the cigarette, you know, the ashes out. All those things become a habit. But if you put yourself, and I can just tell you, share what I did. I used to smoke about 20, that's a pack of cigarettes. I think it's 20 in a pack. I used to smoke a pack a day. And so what I did, and this was, 12 years ago or so, I made up my mind that one day I'm just going to smoke 15. Then the next week I made up my mind I was just going to smoke 10, and then 5, and then 1. And I smoked one cigarette a day for maybe a week. And I just made up my mind that I'm not going to let this cigarette be my God. It's not going to dominate me. It's not going to control me. The desire for it, it's not going to control me. And that I'm bigger and more powerful than this. It's psychological more than anything. And I just hope that that is a suggestion that, you know, you can also use instead of turning to chemicals. And that's all I want to say about that, Brother Rudolph.
Praise be to Allah. Yes, ma'am. No, you're right. The first battle is to make up in your mind that you want to do it. And once you do that, then the help will come. Don't think it's going to be easy, because when you make up in your mind that you want to do it, something righteous, the devil is right there. And that's the time he's going to turn it up. He's going to turn it up. But you have to be more determined to turn it up righteously than he's determined to turn it up wicked.
That's right. Okay. And I want to encourage the people on the phone. Listen, Brother Rudolph and Sister Michelle have many, many years of wisdom between them. If there's anything that you want to ask them, please press 1 on your dial pad, because I know they would love to hear from you. Don't be just the fun soaking up information. I know that as many as you that who are on the phone, I know you all have some information, some histories that you all can share as well. So I just want to keep you all encouraged. I think everybody's just taking notes, because that's what the people in the chat room were saying when you were calling out all those area codes and talking about, we're here to take notes. So, but please just share information with us. Okay, Vicky wants to know, how do you handle depression in the times of crisis? How can you keep other people inspired And so they will not focus on the despair.
Now, see, that is a Sister Michelle question right there, saying, who is God? And, okay, she dropped the call. That's what happened. Call dropped. All right. So, again, what is your relationship to the God? See, when things happen, do you realize, do you recognize the hand of God in what is going on? if you don't recognize the hand of God in it, then you may be taken off of your course, you know, just wreaking havoc in your life, and then you have the old woe is me syndrome, and then you have the blame game, why is this happening to me, what did I do wrong, this and that, this and that. No, you have to realize that things are going to happen to us in this lifetime. Nobody promised us that this life was going to be easy, nor were we promised that life was going to be a bed of roses. And even if they did promise you that life was going to be a bed of roses, what rose bush do you know of that doesn't have at least one thorn in it? And when was the last time you picked a long stem rose and went to grab the stem and did not hit that thorn? And as pretty as that rose was, and as sweet smelling as that rose was, you cut when you got pricked by that thorn. So it's the same way, you know, where life is concerned and where things happen to us in our lives. We have to be aware constantly that God is at work, either his active will or his permissive will, but God is at work. What is God to show you? You know, from The Color Purple, remember that song, Listen, God is trying to tell you something? Well, what is it that God is trying to tell you at that particular point? And I'm not saying that you're going to get the answer right then. But if you are aware of the fact that God is in control, then you should also be aware of the fact that now is the time when you have to turn it up and nurse your Quran more so than ever. Why? To keep your mental sanity so that you can hold on until the change comes. See, bad times don't last always, but if you give up before the change comes, then you never know what was on the other side or when your relief is coming. So you have to be willing to stick it out. I make a joke with people a lot when they, you know, say things to me about, you know, Brother Rudolph, how's it going? I tell them, man, it's a short rope, but I got a firm grip on it. Again, that's a joke, but it's not a joke. I mean, I realize that, you know, I'm not in control of what's going on, and I realize the fact that things are happening around me and in my life, but the one thing that I have control over is my attitude when I'm going through something. The one thing that I do control is my attitude, my mental outlook on what is going on around me or what I'm going through. And if you don't allow anyone to invade or always remember that Allah is your patron and to him is your eventual return. And if he deems this is what the lot is for you, then so be it. Why? Because our life, our death, and our sacrifice should all be for Allah, the Lord of the world, our creation, the one that brought us into his creation. And I know it sounds rhetorical and it sounds like an easy thing to do, but it's not. And this is something that we have to work daily at and mature into that type of thinking and that type of response. And we have to surround ourselves with others who are striving to do the same thing, and that becomes your support group that can help keep you focused on what the goal is. So I'll stop there with that. Sister Michelle, are you on the line yet?
Yes, sir. I'm here, Brother Rudolph.
Okay. Sister Queen, can you repeat that question for Sister Michelle?
Yes, sir. Vicki wanted to know, how do you handle depression in times of crisis? How do you keep people inspired so they will not focus on the despair?
Praise be to Allah. That's a beautiful question. Beautiful question. First, I'm going to hit it from the medical side. One, I would tell that person to increase their B vitamins, because sometimes when you're a little down, it's really a vitamin deficiency. So I would tell them increase B vitamins 1, 6, 11, 12. So look up, research some B vitamins. If you don't like taking vitamins, look at foods that are high in vitamin B and increase those in your diet, because that will help you with stress and depression. And two, you know, the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan said that God loves those who are steadfast under trial, and that one should be careful how you think when you're under trial. It's one of the tweets he sent out in the last couple of days. So God loves you when you're steadfast under trial. You know, you can't be double-minded. When you're under trial, you got to know that Allah loves you, that your Heavenly Father loves you, that God loves you, and that if he puts it to you, it's because he loves you and he'll bring you through it. When we're auditing people, and I am a Dianetics auditor, one of the things we say, the only way through it is to go through it. You know, you might say, oh, this is painful, I don't want to talk about it. Well, we can't get through it unless we go through it. And so it is with our trials. If God is your best friend, and in one part of the Holy Quran, it says that Allah is your only friend, then you got to believe that your best friend, if he brings you to something or allows you to come into something, that it's got to be a benefit for you. You may not see it right off, but think just right now, sister, in your own life. Think of some of the worst things that have happened to you, and when time came that later you were able to see, oh, if that hadn't happened, then this wouldn't happen. Oh, if that hadn't happened, then I wouldn't have got this blessing. I can definitely say that in my own life, and I'm sure that 90% of us on the line could say the same, that some of the things that seemed most tragic later became the place where we got our biggest blessings from. In closing, because I heard most of what Brother Rudolph said, and he was so on point, so I don't have to say much, but in closing, the author, Miss Rawlings, she's a great author. She wrote these wonderful books that so many people love. I've never read any of them, with the little boy, the sorcerer. I never read them, but everybody swear they're really good. One of the quotes she said that I remember distinctly was, when I hit rock bottom, I found it the perfect platform for me to rebuild my life. I never read any of her books, but that quote of hers I remember. Sometimes when we hit rock bottom, sometimes when everything looks as if it's lost, it's good that those things were lost, because those things were holding us up, holding us back. They were blocking
That's
us
right.
from our true blessing.
That's right.
It was good that we lost them. I can think of several things right now, and I won't bore you with the trials of my life, but I bear witness with all certainty that the people that I lost out of my life, I'm glad they're gone. The jobs that I lost, I'm glad that I lost them. The things
right.
that were taken from me, I'm grateful that they were taken, because it made room in my heart, in my life, for me to get something oh so much better than I even ever expected. And I find myself praising God now in advance. When I lose something, I say, oh, praise is due to a lot. Oh, I'm so glad that's gone. I feel like a child rubbing my hands like, what am I about to get? What my daddy about to give me? Because I know that God loves me, and he blesses me so often now that I'm almost ashamed. But I take any opportunities to proclaim the greatness, because maybe that's what you needed to hear right now, sister, that someone else went through some heavy trials and they made it on the other side, and so will you. And that's what I want you to say to people around you when they're depressed, when they're down, when it's their turn up to the plate, because we all get a turn. You know, God is fair. He's just. Everybody gets a turn. So when they get a turn, even if you have a turn at the same time, don't commiserate with them, uplift them. To remind them of their blessings if you know them well and they're friends, help them count their blessings, because sometimes we forget what our blessings are. We need somebody else to say, remember that time, and remember that time, and remember that time, and then we almost feel shame that we're depressed. We almost feel ungrateful, and God certainly hates ingratitude. So I'll pass the show back to one of my greatest blessings. Back to you, Brother Rudolph.
Wow. Wow. to that, the last thing I'm going to say to that is this. The Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan said,
when we go through a trial, don't go through a trial with a down attitude, because down is not down unless you see it as being down.
That's right.
Go through the trial with an up attitude again. And remember, Allah is our patron, and to him is our eventual return. Remember, we are to bring good news to the believers, regardless mm-hmm. of what the circumstance or what is going on. We are to bring good news to the believers. So, yeah, we'll stop right there. Prayerfully, she got some of an answer to her question.
I hope so, inshallah. If you didn't, sis, you can definitely inbox me on Facebook, Lachelle Muhammad. You can email me at careunitdetroit911@live.com, and I would love the opportunity to just talk to you, to worship with you over the phone, to thank God with you in advance like the birds do. They get up in the morning singing. They ain't seen the worm yet. It's too dark, but they already know, you know, God is going to bless them. And if he will feed a bird, if he will absolutely feed a raggedy pigeon, so shall he feed you. So shall he feed all of us. So you can email me, and I will send you my personal cell phone number, and we can talk. You know, I've posted things on Facebook and had somebody inbox me and say, you know, anything else you want to say about that? So I can definitely talk to you, straight wire you, pray with you, whatever you need, because I'm your sister. I mean, also, Sister Queen, Brother William said he's trying to call in. So if you could either pluck him out of the calls or reach out to Brother William so we can bring him on.
Yeah, I think the lines may be full, and he probably can't get in. So I'm gonna have to hang up somebody to get him in.
But that's that 812. That's that 812. So wherever you see an 812 or 510.
If he raises his hand like a caller, you can pluck him in, right?
Well, we only have 750 phone lines, and once they get full,
wait a minute, Sister Queen. Are you telling me that all the phone lines are full?
That's what the ticker say, and if he's calling and he can't get in,
wait.
If he's calling and can't get in, that's why.
And nobody is raising their hand to ask a question?
They do me like that all the time. Yeah, it depends on what you're talking about. Now, let me tell you the truth. If we were talking about relationships or sex or money, it just depends. But I think a lot of people are just really taking notes. I don't know. Well, we can ask them,
that's the right question.
We could ask you. So Brother Rudolph can ask you why you won't ask a question. Let me see if I'm trying to call Brother William, but I'm not getting an answer from the 812 number.
Okay. Let me try.
Okay, hold on. Okay, wait a minute. No, that's not him. Okay, so let's see. Maybe somebody in Maryland.
443.
You want to say anything to us tonight? Calling from Maryland. Maryland, you want to say anything to us tonight? I guess not. See, that's what they do.
Okay, let's try
Missouri.
It's very introspective.
Wait, hold on. St. Louis. Oh, I'm sorry, 0040. No. See, they don't want to say anything.
Well, while we're on, though, I got a text, and I tried to reach out to get more information on it, and I couldn't. But let me just give this information like this. April 25th through the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
In Texas, someone is going to be walking 55.5 miles from Galveston to Houston to bring awareness to disaster prepared. Now, this is his fifth time doing it. So evidently, the people in that area are very knowledgeable about this, and they know it. So if you're from the Galveston, Texas, Houston, Texas, Dallas, Texas area, and you know about this event that's going on, contact us here at the show so where we can promote this event, because this is an event that's worthy to be promoted. Someone is willing to walk 55 and a half miles just to bring awareness to disaster preparedness. I want them on the show. I want to talk to them. I want them to have access to the airwaves to say what they need to say. This is something that needs to be promoted. So, again, if you have this information, contact the Queen or contact us at the Care Unit Detroit 911 at live.com.
Okay, and what were those dates? Did you say April 22nd?
April 25th through the 22nd.
Okay, because I know on the 26th is Disaster Preparedness Weekend in Galveston.
And that's what this has to be about.
Okay.
The walk is going to end at PABA, PAPA, in the Third Ward on Sunday afternoon, April 22nd. So that's
And the PABA is the boxing arena with Reverend Ray Martin, where Muhammad Ali and many of those great boxers have come through Houston and boxed there. So
okay.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think her name is Peggy, but I'll get more information, and maybe I can reach out to her.
And maybe we can get someone on the show for next Tuesday so that they can talk about it.
Okay. All right. No problem. Okay. Yeah, I have a number here, and I'll give her a call. Okay. Let me see. I was trying to, I don't know, Brother William, I'm trying to get him in. He's not answering his phone for some reason. So is it possible he's not ready yet, or?
No, he texted me. I'm trying to get on. I cannot get on.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. So now I don't know.
Okay, so let me see if he's online, because I'm calling him.
Okay.
All right. We'll go ahead and proceed. We have a question from Aaron. Aaron wants to know how to fight the school district on these testing diagnoses that they label our children with. Learning disabled and hyperactivity disorder. My children learn well when I teach them. I ask them questions, they respond and comprehend well. I just think this is a conspiracy against our children. I will not allow my children to take medications that will alter them. They are not learning disabled, but if I do not comply with what the school district has decided, then my children may not get an education. Okay. Wow.
Where is she calling from?
This is Aaron. I can ask him.
Yeah, ask him where it's from.
Yeah, ask him where it's geographic. Where it's
Dallas, Texas.
You said Texas?
Dallas, Texas, yes.
Okay, Dallas, Texas. I don't pull him out of school then. Pull them out the doggone school. Not like the school teaching them anything anyway. I know, well, you shouldn't say that. You got to be careful about what you say. Don't be just throwing stuff out there like that. So pull them out the doggone school system. If they're not educating them the way that you know that they should be educating them, and if they want to try and dope them up on medication and stuff, it's your responsibility to look out for your child. If you can teach them better, than sitting up there in that annex to the prison industrial complex and pull them out. Find a Muhammad University there in your area, or if you can't find one of those, find two or three other parents like-minded like yourself that have the same issues going on, that have the same desire, and homeschool your own children. That's my answer. Because
okay.
You're right. Because you're 100% right. It is a conspiracy against your children, especially if they're black males. It is a conspiracy. They do want to get them strung out on these toxic psychotropic medication that in 10 years will destroy their livers and kidneys and kill them. They
That's
do
right.
want to do that.
That's right.
So you're 100% correct in what you're thinking. Now the question is, how much are you willing to do to save the lives of your children?
That's right. One of my siblings in the state that they lived in, they don't have to ask their parents' permission. If the school deems, when they test your child and they deem that one of my nephews was hyperactivity, learning disabled, they LDHD, QD, BD, they put every, you know, D on him they could, and they medicated him. And so my brother and his wife was picking him up from school, and they wonder, why is the boy coming home like he in a fog? And they just they couldn't figure it out. Is he staying up too late? They put him in the bed early. They're giving the boy vitamins. And he's just sluggish and lethargic, and they couldn't figure it out. And when they asked the teacher and pressed her, you know, she broke under the pressure of my brother drilling her, and she finally could, you know, admitted that the school was drugging him. My brother, of course, thought this was illegal. And when he pushed the issue, he found out that in his state, the great state of Louisiana, they could do that. If the child was considered, if the child tested in those categories, they could medicate them. Because they had told my brother and his wife they thought he was learning disabled, hyperactive. My brother and his wife, you know, were like, no, he's fine. He does fine with us. He does fine at church. He does fine at Sunday school. No, no. And so they didn't hear of it. So they medicated the boy. My mother, who was a college-educated nutritionist and worked as a nutritionist for 40 years, she said, well, let's just change his diet. So they pulled him out of school. They put him in a private school, which wouldn't medicate him, took him out of public school. I'm an advocate for homeschooling myself, or Muhammad University of Islam, if you have one in your area. And after changing his diet, it cut down on the hyperactivity. Does the boy have a lot of energy? Yes. To this day, he has a lot of energy. But when they took him off the medication and got his diet under control, they were able to cut down on the distractedness. Now, that happens a lot with black males. They do seem distracted, but if you speak to them, if the teacher talks to them, if they had a decent teacher, they would find out they are paying attention. Just because they're not staring you down like you're an interesting movie, it doesn't mean that our children aren't paying attention. One of my sons, they didn't want to put him in advanced math, and I knew that, you know, the enemy was the teacher, so I knew the enemy didn't want my son in advanced math class, and they kept saying he couldn't handle it. I pulled him out of school because that's just the kind of parent I am. I did homeschooling for a while, couldn't work it out with my work schedule as a single parent, put him in MUI, worked out a little payment plan. As long as I could afford it, I struggled, kept him in MUI, Muhammad University, worked for my son. Now he's back in public school, and he doesn't have a math teacher. Why? They don't have a teacher that's smart enough to teach him. He teaches himself. In math class, he sits in front of the computer and teaches himself. The child who they said had attention deficit, the child they said who couldn't do it, the child they said had too much energy, now he's smarter than all the teachers in his high school. And next year they told me they'll be sending him to college. He'll do dual enrollment at college and half the day in high school because he's beyond them. So don't let them tell you that about your baby because it makes them money. If they can label your child, they get more money. So it's about a check for them, but they'll label your child and they won't get the label off.
That's 100% correct. And we're, I'm speaking to Dr. Ali now to try and get a date from him that he will come on the program and speak about immunizations, how they work
in conjunction with that particular platform to dumb down, medicate, isolate, constrict, and prevent our children, again, especially the males, from excelling.
Could you now get back with you as soon as possible? Thank you very much.
In school. Brother William, you on the line?
No, that was his voicemail. So I was just trying to call in. So.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. So, again, to the person that wrote that in, again, find a Muhammad University of Islam in your area. And if there's not one there, find a Muhammad mosque in your area and go to the mosque and ask the question. See, here's the thing. We know that Muhammad University of Islam is the answer to educating our children. But again, it comes down to the resources so that we're not dependent on the enemy and begging for crumbs from the table. We have enough money in the circulation in our community to support our own independent education system, but we have to see that and be willing to sacrifice for the betterment of our children those vices that extract the money away from our community. And Ciroc, I don't give a damn about the entertainers endorsing these alcohol drinks, Hypnotic and Ciroc and Hennessy and Kvasia. I'm not damn about all of that. What I care about is, why is it that we as righteous thinking adults aren't waging the war against that? And why aren't we waging the war of our children? Okay, if we're in the Nation of Islam, we, quote unquote, technically, don't have those rights. So that money that would normally go there, then where else are we frivolously throwing that money away at when it could be directed? The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is asking us right now to contribute to the Muhammad Economic Blueprint. How many of us have not to this day contributed? And if we have, how many of us have not got five other people that are in our circle to contribute, knowing that that money is the answer to our independence? Okay, I'm going to stop right there.
And Brother Rudolph, if you don't mind, let me add, because this is kind of like my area of expertise, and I just want to share an experience. My oldest son, when he was in the third grade, I knew early on he had a learning disability due to the fact that when he was 9 months old, he climbed out of his crib and he fell. And he fell and he developed a hairline fracture along his ear. And he had difficulty hearing. And I knew that that would be a delay in his learning progress because it was a long time before we knew he could not really hear. He didn't lose all of his hearing, but everything that he heard from that side of his head, from the right side, sounded like a whisper. And so he was slow in development in his language and things of that nature, and as well as comprehension. But he fared pretty well through from pre-K to second grade. Then in third grade, he just couldn't catch hold. And I saw his struggle, and I, you know, had tutors and tutored him and things of that nature, hooked on phonics, we did all that. But he still was not at the level of his peers. At the end of the school year, they got ready to promote him to the fourth grade. I actually had to take the principal to court because I refused to let them push my child through the system. Because if you remember the football player Dexter Manley, who went on to college, who went on to be the football player for the Washington Redskins, he's a you know, a friend of mine, long time. Who knew he was illiterate? College graduate. And that, I was determined that that was not going to happen to my children. And so I took my children's school to court, and I won. And I made my son repeat the third grade until he was able to grasp that information and learn. Well, nowadays, it seems like the tables are turned. They want to label our children learning disabled, when the problem really is, especially in Texas, is that most of your teachers are certified to teach. They're not degreed in the area of education, but they have a degree in something else, and they are certified. So they don't even necessarily have the psychology courses that they need to interact with children from pre-K to 12th grade. There are a lot of entities that are missing when it comes to applying what they know on how to educate a child. Some of them don't even know the stages of development, so they don't know how to effectively communicate information to your child. And so after a period of time and observation, they begin to say, well, he doesn't understand what I'm saying. He can't get what I'm saying, so evidently he must be slow. Never turn in the mirror on self and say, well, maybe me as an instructor may not be qualified. So the first thing that you do is, number one, if your child has been tested, then if they have labeled your child as a learning disabled child, then your first step is to follow up with a physician's report. If the physician's report is contrary to what the school is saying, then you go to your school board and you challenge them, you fight them, you tell them that, no, my child will not be labeled as such. You request a different instructor and preferably a more experienced instructor, but you do not settle for those diagnostic tests that they give our children to classify them in a particular way. You do not have to settle for that. If it's anything as a diagnosis as far as what's going on with their mind, you have a right to have a physician verify, you know, that that is absolutely the truth. And then look for your alternatives, and it's not necessarily medication. It could be tutoring. It could be phonics. It could be some other language skills that needs to be included in the curriculum, but he doesn't have to be excluded out of the regular curriculum of learning. So there are many steps that you can take, and you don't have to just accept them placing him in another class. As a matter of fact, you can also call for a grievance, and while your grievance is pending, your child can stay in his regular classes. And I just wanted to share that, Brother Rudolph. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you, sis. Thank you. Again, what I'll say is this. We have to remember that there is a concerted, concentrated effort to destroy the black male child. And anyone that thinks there's not, I don't know what the hell is your problem or where you're living. You're like an ostrich with its head stuck in the sand. The problem is the other part of your anatomy is wide open. And that's why I keep getting kicked. We, you know, I'm unapologetically black. We, as a family and as a people, have to understand that the playing field is not level. It's not equal. We will never be considered equal because we're not equal.
And so that's that. So why keep trying to be equal with that? That's not your equal. See, I don't have a problem with separating from that which is already proven that it's not going to do right by me. I don't have a problem. I have a problem with people trying to keep me included in a situation where I'm constantly getting my butt kicked. I have a problem with that. I'll leave that alone. That's not this week's program. Are there any more questions in the chat room?
Yes, and we have some new callers on the phone, so I just want to remind people again, press one on your dial pad, and we'll be more than happy to take your question and comment. And then there's a question from Anonymous. They want to know, is it dangerous to stop eating meat all of a sudden, or should you do it gradually, and what are the dangers of eating red meat?
Okay, all right. A heart attack. Your arteries clogging up and you die. Okay. Should you wean yourself off of it? That's a personal thing for you. All right. Let me put it that way. Let me say it this way. I could sit here and tell you the pros and cons to it. But all you will do will come right back at me and say, well, Brother Rudolph, that's just the way you feel. So why don't we do this? Why don't you go on www, the internet, the World Wide Web, and look at what the experts themselves, or the so-called experts themselves, say are the medical reasons why you should versus why you shouldn't. And then why don't you experiment on yourself? But then also ask yourself this question. That red meat that you are eating, where's it coming from? Do you know where it's coming from? Do you know the source of that cow? Do you know how that cow is being raised, fed, cared for, slaughtered, how the meat is being processed, packaged, and getting to you? Those are just questions. Feel all right with the answer? Do you? If you can't, then act appropriate. That's the way I'm going to answer that question. Sister Lachelle?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Rudolph. I love your answer. Concise, to the point, direct. I'm going to speak from my personal experience. When I first heard the life-giving teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I was so sure I was not going to join the Nation of Islam, you know, laugh out loud. And but I heard about pork, and I said, well, I'm not going to eat that. No, that I agree with. Might not going to be a Muslim. Definitely going to stop eating pork. And so I stopped. Well, when I did become a registered Muslim, I wanted to give something up because most of the believers, when they got registered, they stopped eating pork. I said, I want to give something up, too. I gave up red meat right there that day on the spot. The day I recited is the day I stopped getting red meat. And the energy and vitality increased. I could definitely say that. Another thing about red meat that I learned as a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is that red meat makes you more aggressive. So if you want to chill for real, you might want to stop eating red meat because it does make you more aggressive. It does make you, as a comedian joke say, you wake up in the morning with your fist balled up. Red meat makes you more aggressive, more likely to fight, more agitated. That's just the reality of some of the qualities of red meat and the way that it's killed and the way that it's fed and the way that it's taken care of, unfortunately, in this country. It's so shot up with so many hormones, it's just really not fit for human consumption. They do have a lot of studies that link the eating of red meat with increased risk of cancer and heart disease. So you can just really study that. And I wanted to direct you to a website. that I do enjoy studying from, which is WebMD. And on that website, they do talk about some of the things about the risk of eating red meat. It says for heart disease, the answer is pretty clear. Some red meat is high in saturated fat, which raises the blood cholesterol, as Brother Rudolph said, high levels of LDL cholesterol that increase the risk of heart disease. So, I mean, that's right off of the WebMD website. So I would direct you to there, www.webmd.com/food and recipes. So just do some research for yourself. But I didn't wean myself off. I stopped immediately. They said that day that I recited and became a registered Muslim and got my X, and I didn't have any negative side effects, only positive side effects, and I haven't eaten meat since 1990, and it has been no harm. So that's my commercial. Let the red meat go.
Praise be to Allah. And I'll just tell you, I haven't eaten red meat since November 4th, 1979. I was in high school where I didn't even have the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad when I stopped eating red meat. I just knew that after a football game, I went and got 20 White Castle burgers, and then belly busters did me so bad that after I finally weaned myself away from the porcelain gauze, that's the toilet bowl, for those that don't know, that next morning, you never had to worry about me putting no more meat coming in my system. None at all. And I know that I feel great. I feel great. So I don't even know that I missed it. So do your research and see what you come up with. And if it works for you, then work your plan. If it doesn't, say la vie.
Praise be to Allah.
Yes, sir. Okay. We have a question from Sherelle. Sherelle says that my 34-year-old sister has recently been diagnosed with Graves' disease. They say it's Graves' disease. I say it's overeating. How can you tell?
Oh, that's a good question. Between Graves' disease and between overeating. Okay. Again, I'm going to direct you somewhere. I'm going to direct you right back to the website they use to conclusively diagnose Graves' disease and then find out what the signs and symptoms are for a person overeating and compare the two. You will get your answer. Sister Lachelle?
I definitely agree with you, but I always like to encourage all of us to get a second opinion and a third opinion. And when you go to the second opinion, let me make sure I say this if I've never said it on the show before. When you go to the second opinion, don't tell them what the first opinion said. When
right.
you go get a second opinion, do not tell them what the first opinion people said. Then it's not a second opinion. Let them do their own test. Don't bring them anything. They said, bring your lab where I can't find it. Don't bring them anything. Go and let them do everything independently, because what if that day you had a false positive or a false negative? What if your specimen got contaminated? You keep passing these same records around and they're wrong. So go to the second opinion and the third opinion. Let them do some completely independent testing. And then see if three doctors come up with the same conclusion. And that still doesn't mean they're right. But see if three doctors come up with the same conclusion. Because when my mother got ill, they told her she was a diabetic because her insulin levels was off. And she started taking insulin injections. A woman who's been a nutritionist for 40 years, college-educated nutritionist, couldn't believe she got diabetes, weighed properly, ate properly. And then they found out 2 years later they were wrong. She had pancreatic cancer. And this is, she got a second opinion. Both of the opinions was wrong. So sometimes you have to get that third opinion and take an independent third opinion. So that's what I would suggest to ask your sister, to get another opinion. Sometimes, and there are other things you can do for that thyroid, and a lot of times with that Graves' disease, it's a thyroid issue. There can be other things that you can do. And your thyroid could be off and you not have Graves' disease and it causes you to overeat. So I would
right.
say get a second
right.
and third opinion try some holistic healing as well. It's not too far gone. I'm a great believer in holistic medicine for preventative care. But once you down the road, you might have to go traditional medicine, get it on a healthy level, and then switch over and slowly convert to holistic medicine, unless you can afford to go see Dr. Aleem, and he is definitely blessed with healing hands. I would say go to Washington, D.C., see Dr. Aleem and do his program. Whatever you have, he definitely can help you.
Well, you and now on that note, you don't have to travel all the way to Washington, D.C. to see Dr. Aleem. All you got to do is get a couple of like-minded people like yourself in the area you're in, contact him or contact me at careunitdetroit911@liv.com. And let us know what area you're in, and we'll set it up so that he will come and visit you right in your own living room.
That's true. So, he will do that.
So he's out of his clinic in D.C. more than he's in, which reminds me it's about time for him to do a return trip to Detroit. So we need to start gearing up for that.
That's right.
To get the Detroit area ready for the return of Dr.
Okay. And Carol wants to know, how can you protect your children if they do not receive immunization?
How to eat to live. How to eat to live. Books one away with the proper mindset when they are receiving the food, as well as the proper mindset when you are preparing the food, where that food is coming from. All of that has to do with how to eat to live. It's never too late to start, and it's never too small of a change to start implementing. Nobody says that you're going to just stop doing what you're doing today and guru tomorrow, but start phasing out some of the negative things and start phasing in some of the good things, and over time, you will be able to correct some of the wrongs that are going wrong, and you will be able to fortify some of the good things that are already there before it's too late. And the children may not even notice the difference. As Mr. Lachelle talks about, you know, occasionally, where she gives some recipes, start substituting the cauliflower for the potato salad. And the cauliflower macaroni and cheese, or the squash for the macaroni and cheese. And you know, little things like that. Start substituting. And don't even tell them about it. Just let them eat it. And while they sit there snacking on it and knowing that they like it, don't even tell them about it. Let them keep thinking what they think. Trick.
I love it. Definitely, this is one time where trickery is okay. Definitely, my children have never been immunized. I'm proud to say they have never been immunized. They follow How to Eat to Live. They've never been sick. They've never had a cold. They've never missed a day of school unless I pulled them out to take them to Savior's Day, Holy Day of Atonement. One of the things I did do is I was a nursing mother. That colostrum, you know, that first thing you get when you're nursing, it does have, you know, immunization qualities in it. I mean, I was immunized, so they came from me, you know, they covered. That was always my theory, they covered. I nursed them, I fed them How to Eat to Live, and it's worked, and they've never been sick. When they went to public school, I had to sign a waiver. It is in the state of Michigan and a lot of other states. You can, for either religious or philosophical reasons, determine that you do not want to immunize your child. It doesn't have to just be religious. You can say for philosophical reasons, but if you choose that, they will ask you, well, what are your philosophical reasons? And I gave them the research that I had done. You know, and I explained to them, you know, the teachers of Anwar Elijah Muhammad and the research and how so many health crises are linked to those immunizations. You think it's protecting your child, and some there are children that have died from getting immunizations, and the doctor told me, well, that's just 1 in 10,000. I said, I only care if the one is mine. So I wasn't willing to play Russian roulette. I'm a Muslim. I don't gamble. So I wasn't willing to gamble with my children's lives. So they have never been immunized. And I've never had a problem with getting them in school or anything goes. So I would say How to Eat to Live. I agree with Brother Rudolph 1,000%. How to Eat to Live and, you know, protect them. Don't take them around sick people, stuff you normally wouldn't do. Don't take my children around sick people if they were immunized. Don't take them around sick people. Keep them in healthy environments. Teach them the importance of hand washing, which is also something that I posted on Brother Rudolph's website, the proper hand washing technique. Teach them how to wash their hands properly for the right amount of time and how to dry them properly and how to exit the bathroom with a paper towel to cover their handle so they don't re-contaminate their hands. Hand washing is so critical. Not sharing drinks and foods with other people. You teach them things, that, and as they get older, their immunity will build its own self. So I've never had a problem, Brother Rudolph.
Yeah, and to add on to that, and teach them what the issues are with the immunization so they know for themselves. And that way they won't speak. Well, you think you're doing the right thing by feeding them this, but they out eat the gun. They out eat the other stuff that is contrary to their health.
That's right.
Well, I just have to add to that. I am a mother of three children. I'm a grandmother of one. I was raised up in the Nation of Islam. I've never had immunizations. My children have never had immunizations. My 8-year-old grandson has not had immunizations. And that's the evidence that you can live without them. So
that's right.
Three generations.
Witnesses.
But actually, four generations of my family, I know they have not ever been immunized. And I tell you that the key to a great immune system is the navel thing. Can't dispute it. It's not anything complicated. You don't have to go to a rocket scientist to get it. The navel bean. I don't care how you prepare it. If you don't want to eat navel bean soup every day, there are a billion recipes with navel beans. Navel bean salad is my favorite thing. You cut up some onion, some bell pepper. You shred you a little garlic in there. You put it on some lettuce. Cut up some tomato and cucumber. And that bean is a great cold salad. So whatever you got to do to get it in, get it in. I just had to add that. Thank you.
And raw milk. I'm putting my own commercial out here. I don't care who disagrees. I don't care who want to challenge me on it. I'm not a scholar. But I'll debate anybody on navy beans and full raw milk. Raw milk. Non-homogenized raw milk. Okay, that's my promo for raw milk.
And let me say this, since you brought up raw milk. You know, a lot of people I've heard say that they can't drink the raw milk because they are lactose intolerant. Let's just clear the air. You are not lactose intolerant. You are homogenized, pasteurized intolerant because of all of the things that they do to the homogenized milk. That process is more than likely what you're intolerant of. It's not the raw milk itself. So anytime you tamper with something, take it out of its natural element, and you use chemicals to enhance it for whatever reason, those things that go against your nature are what you're intolerant of. And I want you to, if you would, Sister Michelle and Brother Rudolph, to expound on that, because I don't think that people really understand the effects of the chemical processes that a lot of our foods and drinks go through, like corn syrup is one of the worst things that you could ever put in your body. It extracts the fluids from your body. It closes down your glands. You can't secrete your sweat properly. Corn syrup does a lot of damage. So, Brother Rudolph, can you tell them about that for a moment?
We were trying to save that for a whole other show, but okay. Yeah. Let me go back to the lactose intolerant stuff. Let me say it this way. All right, you say that you're lactose intolerant. Prove it. When was the last time you had some real milk in your system? And if you say, well, I tried World Milk once, and it sent me to the bathroom, well, that's what it was supposed to do, because it was pushing that garbage up out of you. That's what it's designed to do. It's designed to clean you out by you with what you're supposed to have. And the only reason that you would be lactose intolerant is because you withheld that stuff out of your system for so long that your system now does not recognize it as being good. So now you have to introduce it into your system in small amounts so your system can get used to it again. So that's that. Now, where the chemicals are concerned, yes, the chemical process that most of our foods go through, if you really do, you know what I would tell somebody is, if you, and that's the great thing about the internet, YouTube homogenization of your milk. And look at how they boil it until they boil everything out of it, and then look at that big vat of white gooey stuff that they drop down into it, and then turn it, and let it cool off before they bottle it. But yet, if you do an analysis of what that white gooey substance is that they're put back into it after they have boiled it and killed everything, that's where it boils it out of. That's why it has to say fortified with vitamin D, fortified with vitamin A, fortified with this. Why? Because they killed all the natural stuff. Its job is to make money for the country, for the government, by regulating what so-called foods and drugs are allowed to be called foods and drugs and sold to the public. Well, again, if an apple can sit on your table without decaying for 2 weeks, because real food will, it will spoil, because the raw milk doesn't spoil. It curves. Totally different product. But what I'll say is foods without preservatives will not last in that state as long as foods that are preserved. Well, if it's preserved, what's it preserved with and what's it preserved for? It's preserved so that it can sit on the shelf at the supermarket longer than it's on your table is a relatively short period of time, because the natural nutritional value of it is a short period of time. When you pick something or harvest it, it's time to eat it so that you can get the most out of the nutrition that is in that food. When you're talking about holding something for 2 or 3 months down the line, you have to do a chemical in order to preserve the nutritional value of it, if this is where the term preserving comes from, or canning comes from, so that you can help extend the life of the food and extend the nutritional value of the food. So these are all different processes that it goes through, and these are all different shows that we are going to bring to you so that you can get a better understanding of exactly what we're talking about, and then maybe you will press the number one and ask your question
so that we can get a discussion rather than a monologue.
No, you covered that one so well that I can comfortably say I can stand down, Brother.
Well, Sister Lachelle,
yes,
looking at the time, it's that time for us to start winding down. So I will let you go first and give your closing and last remark.
Well, I'd just like to say, as always, it is wonderful to have the opportunity to be on Queen of Jesus Network, and we thank Sister for allowing us to put our show on her network. I definitely always learn something from you. Brother Rudolph is always an education. It's always a joyfully entertaining, infotainment, and I definitely enjoy doing the research to present to our listeners. So each and every one of you, from the bottom of my heart, I love you, and I keep you in my prayers and my thoughts and my studies, that we might bring to you something every week that can be of use to you and your family. So thank you for listening, and God bless you throughout the rest of the week until we get the chance to share with you again. Brother Rudolph.
Yes, ma'am, and I'm going to make mine quick. Listen, I'll say it like this. Remember, you didn't bring yourself here. The world was spinning before you got here. And so there's a plan to that which we need to learn in order to sustain life, to preserve life, and to maintain life. Our job is to find that information that is here on the planet. That is the key to the preservation of life and the lengthening of life. And it's our job to find it, harvest it, and implement it so that we can live long enough to do the job that we are supposed to do here on the planet. So don't be too proud to pray. Don't be afraid to pray. Acknowledge the fact that there is a creator that is greater than you or I, that is in control of things, and understand that we don't have all the answers, but the one that created us has the answers, so we have to go to them what it is we need to find out. Don't listen to people that tell you you're not supposed to question God. If you don't question God, who are you going to question? Because God is your creator. God is your nurturer. God is your sustainer. Go to the one that created you and ask the question that you need to ask to get the proper answer. And until next week, we pray that Allah blesses you with life, health, and the abundance of strength, and be ready next week to ask questions. Sister Queen?
Okay, and do you have, that asking me, do you have a topic for next week already? And Lyndon wants to know, are you going to do a show on mental illness?
Okay, we're going to do a show on mental illness next week. Mental illness will be the show next week.
Okay. And then, can you give the web address one more time?
Yes. It's Care Unit Detroit 911 at LIVE.com. CareUnit Detroit, DETROIC 911 at LIVE.com.
Yes, sir. And I also want to remind the listening audience, I think that what we're going to start doing as well, we can also share pertinent information with you on the Disaster Preparedness group page on Facebook. I know we haven't used it that much, but I think we could share more information with you that way as well. If you have difficulty navigating to the website for any reason, I'm pretty sure Sister Lachelle will share some information with us, as well as maybe just a tip a week or something from Brother Rudolph. And so please check out the page.
I will make this commitment. I'll make this promise to you and to the listeners now that I will go on that web page daily and post stuff.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry.
Michelle has been on me about it. She's been on me about it since it was created. And I've never made that promise. So now I'm making the promise.
Okay.
Crazy, Tula.
Okay, and I have some people who are hearing impaired, so I'm just trying to share the information. Okay, so I just told him, Brother Rudolph, that you are going to start putting, and we do have to consider that, and I know I probably never shared it because I try to do it all myself. We do have listeners who access the hearing impaired section on Blog Talk, and what it is that the shows are often transcribed for them. And so sometimes when you're using automated systems or whatever, the information is not necessarily accurate because what we say may not be recorded where it's audible to the machine, and then the machine may not put it out correctly. So oftentimes our hearing impaired listeners will have questions in the chat room as well. So I was just thinking that it would be a good idea for health tips to go onto the group page so that they can actually read them there.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Point taken.
Okay. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Brother Rudolph and Sister Lachelle. And we're going to have to
come together
to find a way how we can get our audience to talk to us. I'm going to send you a report. I'm going to send you all a report to show you how many people are actually on this phone, and they're all quiet. I will talk about y'all and call y'all a name, but it's against my religion. Okay. Thank you all. May Allah continue to bless us all with the light of understanding. We leave you as we came before you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.